Good morning. Happy Father's Day. What's that? And me, I've been told. I don't think I've ever had a hard enough I've never had such a difficult time preparing for a lesson like I've for this morning. And I want you guys to understand where I'm coming from, where I'm coming at towards a topic like this, Father's Day. And I want to share with you one of my first memories. And it was my fourth birthday. It was 1987, and the 80s were in full swing. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were everywhere, and I was turning four. The day was about me. My birthday had to be had at my grandmother's house. My grandmother lived in Citrus Heights, California, and I remember this day specifically. You have to understand, it was burned into my brain. It had to be at my grandmother's house because my father's hospital bed was there. For the previous year, and I'm probably going to cry, as most of you were probably too. For the previous year, my father had been battling brain cancer. As a four-year-old, you have no idea what's happening. I can tell you, as a five-year-old, you have no idea what's happening. Six-year-old, you have no idea what's happening. Probably around 15, 14, you get an idea of what was happening. My grandmother is amazing. If I can build a statue of somebody, it would be to her. The year previous, my grandfather was dying, and she didn't want him to die in a hospital. So she purchased the hospital bed so that he could die at home. A year later, that's where she would see her son die as well. For 26 years, I have sat uncomfortably on Father's Day. So the idea of you sitting uncomfortably for a Father's Day doesn't bother me so much. One out of every three children in this country go home to a fatherless house. One out of three. That turns out to 20 million children. And Father's Day? To celebrate Father's Day for the rest of us, that would be like creating a day called Millionaire's Day, where you get to celebrate millionaires. You get to give them gifts. You wake up and cook them breakfast, pancakes and bacon, as is usual. And you get to celebrate them. Can you imagine how awful that day would be? How awkward that would be to look towards our millionaires and have to give them gifts? To 20 million children, that is Father's Day. It is a hard day. In stories like mine, and mine is not the worst. I do not want to hear I'm sorries. I've grown up hearing I'm sorries. I'm done being sorry. I've been done being sorry for quite some time. But stories like mine, lives of the fatherless are becoming the rule instead of the exception, and many children look from the outside in to homes that have both loving and caring parents with longing and resentment. When we read Galatians chapter 4:4-7, and in that passage, Paul is talking about God as our Father, and he describes him as this loving person, as this person we can look towards and cry, Abba. We can call him Father. We can have a personal relationship with this person. We do not get the same warm, fluffy feeling the rest of you do. God is scary. He's not cruel, but he's definitely harsh. So if you have a good father, if you are not one of those 20 million people, I want you to give your father a hug now. You give him a hug. I'll take time. It's all right. You give that man a hug. Great, good is that for me? Do I get a hug? Let me hear you say it. Let me hear you say it.
I love you.
There you go. You can go. Thank you. Here comes the waterworks. All right. Nothing, it's not. We must admit that without God, this topic is damaged. This theme is broken. And without God, we cannot hope to repair it. We cannot hope to repair this. What has happened to me and what has happened to 20 million other people, that is now past. We cannot hope to repair it without God. So when I look to Scripture, and when I see, and I'm looking for a father, I see dysfunctional people. And I see a dysfunctional father. And that's why I love Jacob so much. Jacob is dysfunction incarnate. This man is an absolute mess and a perfect example of what not to do. So if you have your Bibles, turn over to Genesis chapter 32. And we're going to start in verse 22. Now many of you know this story. This is the story of where Jacob fights God, but that's not what I want you to pay attention to. In this previous chapter, starting in verse 1, Jacob is going to be encountering, he's been looking forward, or not necessarily looking forward to, he's actually scared of meeting up with his brother Esau. And if you're familiar with this story at all, Esau and Jacob are brothers. And Jacob has betrayed, he has stolen from Esau. And so Jacob ran away, and he ran to his uncle's house, Laban. And he's been living there for quite some time, and he has amassed a great deal of wealth. Many wives, four wives, and many children. And so him and Laban's relationship was coming to an end, and he had to run away from Laban. And he knew at that point that he was going to have to confront Esau. He was going to have to confront his past. And so in chapter 32, he's been dividing up everything he owns. He's been dividing up his servants, his herds, his sheep, his goats, everything. And he has been dividing them into different camps, so that if one is attacked, he might be able to save something. And so this is where we enter into this story in verse 22. Now he arose, and that same night he took his two wives and his two maids and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. And he took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh. To the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he was wrestling with him. I don't want you to necessarily focus on the fact that Jacob is fighting. It's kind of what Jacob does. Jacob fights with everybody. He fights with his family. He fights with his father. He fights with his family members. What I want you to notice is what Jacob is doing. That Jacob has had his entire family cross this stream. He had his family and everything he owns on the other side. And then he himself didn't cross over. He stayed on the other side of the stream. See, Jacob ends that day as a coward. As a man who was willing to sacrifice everything that he might have a chance to live. He is separated from his family. And his family needs him. He knows what awaits him in meeting Esau. He knows that Esau is upset. And yet he is willing to sacrifice his family so that he can live. It is easy to fight. It is hard to stay calm, especially since children know how to play us like a piano. And I'm not talking about like they know how to play a piano. I'm talking about a three-year-old who has had access to the piano. And he's just jamming all the fingers, jamming all of the buttons, making a ruckus. They play us like a violin, the worst type of violin, right? You've ever been in a household where someone's trying to practice a violin? You just want them to go anywhere else than practice a violin in your house? Children know how to press our buttons. We gave them to them, our buttons. It's easy to fight. It's hard to stay calm. It's easy to consider your fatherly work done by bringing home the paycheck, paying for college, or providing for your children. It's hard to hold them when they hurt. And it's near impossible to share your emotions, your pains, and your insecurities with them. We know this story more for Jacob's willingness to fight God than his willingness to be with his family. It's near impossible to share our emotions with our children. It's easy to talk at your kids. It's hard to talk to them. And mothers can usually tell the difference. It's easy to fight. However, Jacob the next day, beginning in chapter 33, since after wrestling God, he decides to change. He reorganizes his priorities. Instead of having what he owns go first and then his family, he decides to bypass all of that. And he decides to lead his family. And he meets Esau first. And he bows before Esau. And he's willing to give Esau everything that he has. And I've always known in the back of my mind, was this because of the fight he had with God? See, Jacob knows what is important. That God must go first. And then family. And then everything else. In view of our fears, and I'm talking to our fathers here, in view of our fears and weaknesses, we cannot run away. We cannot run away. We cannot afford to be cowards. God calls us to be courageous, humbly direct, intentionally compassionate, and sacrificially loving. The problem is not in the fight. It's in who we are fighting against. But I won't leave him there. Turn over to Genesis chapter 37. You think he would learn his lesson. And he kind of has. We see this evolving picture of Jacob. Starting in verse 1. Now Jacob lived in the land where his father had sojourned, in the land of Canaan. These are the records of the generations of Jacob. Joseph, when 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers while he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought back a bad report about them to their father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a very colored tunic. And his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, and so they hated him and could not speak to him on friendly terms. Regardless of how well-intentioned Jacob's gift was, you cannot get past the repercussions of such an act of favoritism. Because of Jacob's ignorant gift of love, Joseph will be led down a path of torture, slavery, and prison. And it starts with the coat. What is your favorite? What do you put before the rest of your family? And this is something that we can all share in. What is your favorite thing? Is it your job? Is it your home, your pride, or even worse, your guilt? Where does your children stand in the bigger picture of your life? And if you have no children, and if you know that someday you just might want to have children, where will they stand in the organizational chart of your life? What do you put before everything else? Anything that stands in the place of God, including your children, will hurt you and will hurt them. And this is something that we are all vulnerable towards. Anything that we put before God, in place of God, and that being our children, that being our jobs, that being our home, our relationships, the thing that we consider to be our favorite, when we place them before God, we fail our children, we fail our families, and we fail ourselves. See, Jacob is learning. He does understand that family is important. But when you have a favorite, when you put something before God, it hurts them as much as it hurts you. Finally, Genesis chapter 48. I know I am being really harsh on Jacob right now. I considered that as I was researching and as I was studying for this lesson. But this is where we will end. Chapter 48, Jacob is about to die. And I imagine, as most people who are on the deathbeds reflect on what's important. My birthday, when I was 4, my father had a tape recorder. And if you don't know what those are, Google it. And it was gigantic. It was absolutely enormous. And he recorded a happy birthday to me. And it was a simple happy birthday. It was happy birthday, Joey, because he called me Joey. If you don't call me Joey. My mom calls me Joey. My grandma calls me Joey. And that was about it. He said, happy birthday. I love you. And that was it. It was no this long, tearful goodbye. I'm going soon. I will always be with you. It wasn't like that. The older I got, the more I learned about my father, the more I learned that he was not that sentimental type of father. It was a simple happy birthday. I grew up, my father was a cassette tape. I played that thing all the time. All the time. Imagine being on your deathbed, knowing all of your mistakes. Knowing all your mistakes as a parent, as a father. See, Jacob must reflect and must remember that his oldest son had slept with one of his wives. Reuben had slept with one of his wives. Simeon and Levi had become murderers. And Dinah was defiled. Joseph was betrayed by his own siblings. Jacob's own children must see his fatherhood as a failure. How would they have celebrated Father's Day? Awkwardly, that's the answer. Very awkwardly. And isn't it funny how children believe that the condemnation of their parents is their prerogative? Our culture has a way of talking down to our previous generations, like ours, like mine, is the first one to do things right. Like we will get parenting right, since we understand what parenting is. However, and this is the important part, holding on to judgment and holding on to that judgment, holding on to that condemnation without mercy, without forgiveness, that is not what God calls us to. That is like drinking poison, hoping the other will die. When we withhold forgiveness and mercy from our own parents, that only kills us. That only damages us. Are you holding on to the sins of the past? Whatever they may be, and they may be many. Withholding forgiveness and mercy towards someone else, or even withholding it from yourself, is not sustainable. It will kill you in the end. But this is the part I love about Jacob. This is what I love so much about him. In view of all of those mistakes, in view of all of those sins, we have verse 15 and verse 16 of chapter 48. And this is what I find truly amazing about fatherhood. We'll start in verse 14. But Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the head of Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, crossing his hands, although Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. And may my name live on in them, and the names of my father Abraham and Isaac, and may they grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Jacob's greatest lesson, and I believe a father's greatest purpose, is to be a blessing to his children. It is never too late to be a blessing to your children. I don't care how old they are or how young they are. It is never too old to be a blessing to your kids. And it is never too late to forgive. It is never too late to forgive. It is never too late to accept a blessing from your Father. And that is probably one of the hardest lessons about this. Imagine, again, put yourself in Joseph's feet, in his sandals, I imagine, moccasins. Knowing all that his father has done, and Israel is blessing his children, is blessing them and giving him a name. See, my grandma's 100th birthday was last year. She's the same age as Retta. Some about people born in 1914 is amazing. And so I decided to go. It's my grandma's 100th. She doesn't get another one of those. And I went with my family. I went with Nellie and my kids. And it was the first time that a lot of her side of the family ever saw my family. And so I showed up, and it had already started. I didn't want to make much of an issue about it. I didn't want to open up to a grand entrance or anything like that. And so we came in through the side. And Nellie can tell you it was quiet. People started looking at me. And it's interesting going to a crowd and have just random people looking at you. And so then people started coming up to me. And they started talking about my father and how great he was. They weren't surprised that I was in ministry. They weren't surprised I had a beautiful family. They weren't surprised by any of that. One lady, and this was really annoying, one lady came up to me, never met her a day in my life, and she started crying in front of me. She couldn't speak. I couldn't say a word to this lady. I gave her a hug. And then someone came by and told me that lady was good friends with your dad. And I look just like him. I look just like my father. It is never too late to be a blessing to your children. I know. It's never too late. This message is more for the broken fathers, the broken children, the kids without fathers, the kids with horrible fathers, however you want to label it. It is never too late to be a blessing, to forgive. And when you are a blessing to your children, then you will fight for them. You will die for them. You will tell them about Jesus and what he has done for you. You will be a great father. So if you consider yourself as a father in need of help, accountability, forgiveness, or mercy, we, as your family, are here to provide for you the same thing a broken and sinful father provided for his son, a blessing. Families are full of holes. I think that's why he calls us holy. Will you please stand and worship God?